This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hi, I am so excited today to welcome Therese Ortenblad to the podcast. Therese has a background in sales and has worked in the home and gift industry for over 12 years, selling to both independent retailers and nationals on the high street. She's passionate about the retail industry and helping product-based business owners make more sales, increase their profits, and develop a strategy for growing their businesses with confidence. Really excited to have Therese on the show to talk about how to get started with wholesale, whatever the size of your business is. I know Therese identifies as an introvert, which I can definitely relate to. She knows so much on this subject. She's a fantastic guest. I'm really excited that I was able to have her on here. And Therese also hosts a fantastic podcast, which is called Let's Talk Shop, which I will link to in the show notes, because if you want to find out more about wholesale and more about selling into retailers, that's definitely a show worth listening to. So I'm now going to introduce you to Therese. Hi, I am so excited to have Therese Ortenblad on the podcast today. So Therese has a background in sales and has worked in the home and gift industry for over 12 years, selling to both independent retailers and nationals on the high street. She's passionate about the retail industry and helping product-based businesses. So hi Therese, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
No problem. So I'm just going to share with everyone how I came about you and how you came to be here, because I always think it's a nice story when there is a story. So I first heard you talking in the All By Mama Network, which I'm a member of, at some point last year. I couldn't tell you when. It feels like autumn, but who knows? 2020 just seems like one rolling month, really. And on the back of that, I started listening to your podcast, which we'll talk about a bit later, and so I invited you here. So thank you for accepting the invitation. Would you mind starting off by telling everyone about yourself, your background, and what it is that you help people with, please?
Yeah, of course. Well, thank you for having me, first of all. It's always nice to be on the opposite end of like the podcast. Doesn't happen that often. I quite enjoy it. My business is called Small Business Collaborative, and I help business owners, founders, product-based businesses start and grow their wholesale. So it's pretty niche, but everything that feeds into that, you know, your sales in general and sales mindset, your profitability and your margins, and anything that comes with running a business and the sales business of that, a lot of systems and that sort of thing. And I've been doing it for about 2.5 years now. Feels like it's gone so quickly. But yeah, I came from a background in sales. I spent over a decade in sales in the home and gift industry. So I sold everything from novelty toys, like animal-shaped crayons, to cupcake lip balms and like high-end home fragrance, stationery, books, tabletops and mugs and things. So lots and lots of different things, and always to that kind of home and gift retailer. So that would be anything from pretty much anyone on the high street, and all the department stores, and a lot of fashion chains as well. So because we all know they don't just sell clothes, so a lot of my customers have been, you know, they're ASOS and I don't know, French Connection or Urban Outfitters. And of course, a lot of lovely independent boutiques and shops as well. Those are my favorite because, you know, who doesn't love a good indie? And then I started my business because I kept going to trade shows and exhibiting and speaking to my retailers and buyers. And they kind of said, well, I can't really buy from them because I would get really excited about the really small brands. And they would say things like, oh, they don't really have their margins right yet. Or, you know, they didn't really have the confidence to buy from those small businesses. So I thought it'd be really lovely to be able to help them. So that's what I'm doing now.
That is really lovely. And thank you for the introduction. So I'm going to start with what will seem like a very, very basic question, but I do like to keep it very, very simple. So for someone who perhaps doesn't know, how would you describe wholesale? What is wholesale?
So to me, that is selling a larger volume at a lower price, mostly to someone that will be reselling it to the end consumer. But it could also be to, you know, a hotel if you do nice smelly soaps. It could be for their hotel rooms too. That could also be a form of wholesale. But generally, it's selling a higher volume than normal.
Perfect. And so that could be to a shop. It could be to a distributor. Just, you know, selling your products in bulk. Okay.
Yeah. But when we say bulk, I think bulk is such a high volume, can be so misleading. You're thinking like thousands of pieces, but it doesn't have to be that. It could equally be intense.
Okay, well, that's interesting to know as well. And I guess, yeah, if you were selling into smaller independent shops, they might not be wanting hundreds of orders. Well, that's good, because I guess that makes it a bit more accessible as well, potentially.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people think that wholesale is this massive beast that you have to go all in, and how can you make it work? But it could be that you make everything, you always want to hand make everything, but you'd like someone else to help you, you know, sell. So you want to have a few brick and mortar stores, and maybe you only ever want five. That is still wholesale.
That's really interesting. I've never thought of that, and I'm thinking that listeners probably haven't as well. So if you were hand making products, for example, and you had 10 stores and you were sending them, I don't know, 10 products at a time, that still counts as wholesale.
Yeah, you obviously have to make sure that it works for you and your margins and time and stuff like that. But, you know, I think that it's a little bit of a misconception that wholesale has to be super big, selling to lots of people. It could be a bit more dipping your toes in, and it could be the way you want to do your business all the time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that. So your business model could be to send stock into just small independent resellers, for example, and that could be a wholesale model.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't need to have loads. It's all about your goals, what you want out of it, I think.
Yeah, that is really interesting, because I think when people think of wholesale, myself included, I'd always thought about sort of high street retailers, big online marketplaces, that kind of thing. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. Okay.
So tell us, why might someone consider wholesale as a way to grow their products business?
So I think the most important thing is obviously the sales aspect, if you want to get your volumes up. But I think the paid, it is in the beginning, I think it's a lot of it being paid for marketing. You know, you get more eyes on your brand, of your product, so it can help you get a bigger reach. It can also help you get your margins up on your retail side, because if you can just put a little bit of volume behind your supplies, with your suppliers, you might be able to access much better pricing. So, you know, if you can buy 100 tea towels instead of 50, then maybe your prices will be a bit more manageable. So you would get a bit more margin on your actual direct sales. So that's another reason why I think it's really good. And of course, the feedback, you know, if you deal with lots of small independent retailers, or even just a handful, they have so much experience and you can get feedback. And I think that is invaluable. And I think that in itself, even if you're really brand new and you're just launching your brand, is a reason to wholesale from the beginning. You know, that you get more eyes on your brand, more visibility, plus that you can get to speak to these retailers that have many years of experience and knows what sells.
Yeah, that all sounds fantastic. And I think as well, there are some products possibly as well that sell better in person as well, that kind of just look better on a shelf than they do in a picture. I've seen products like that where online, you know, it doesn't do them any justice, and you see them in person and you can touch them and feel them, and it's a really different experience.
Absolutely. I think that things like, you know, soaps are quite trendy now, candles, all those things, I much prefer when I can buy them in person. Of course, now, I mean, I end up buying a lot because I find lots of companies online, but that's just the bit of the nature of what we do, I suppose. But, you know, normally, those are the sort of things I would much prefer to buy in person, or even something that has texture to it. Like, even as simple as a greeting card, actually, I'm one of those people that would rather buy it in person, because, I mean, paper is not just paper. It's like all different. And the finishes are all different. So I'm sure a lot of us are like that.
Yeah, I think so. As you say, at the moment, things are obviously very different, but hopefully later this year, things will start to improve in that sense. So if someone is interested in wholesale, how would you get started? What are some first steps you can take, or even things to think about perhaps?
So I think the absolute first thing is to get clear on your pricing, because you don't want to do a lot of work and it not working for you. So you need to really get to know your numbers. And I think this will help you in every aspect of your business. So it's not just for your wholesale, but to make sure that you are clear on your prices. And I think that it's really important in the beginning, when you set those prices, especially your retail prices and your wholesale prices will be based on that, is that you are clear on the margins and also where you want to take the business. So if you already know that you want to grow a big business and you want to go over the VAT threshold, even though that might feel foreign to you now, then I think it's good to take that into account from the beginning. It's better that you make more money in the beginning or more margin than losing 20% of your business when you VAT register. So I think pricing is number one. Number two, I guess, it kind of goes in hand, you can flip them around too. But if you do want to sell to shops, then I think you need to make sure that your products are retail ready. So of course, it's different to sell something online than it's selling on the shelf in a shop. So you want to make sure that you have your branding on everything, that it looks like, you know, something people would want to pick up in the store and know what it is. So if it's something like a craft kit, you have to make sure that it's explained on the outside of the box what's inside the box, so people don't start opening things too much, and that's when things go missing. So you have to think about that, how it's going to look on the shelves, and of course it has to meet all legal requirements as well, because that is your responsibility. That goes for any product that you put out there, of course. But yeah, if you start with your product and your pricing, I think that's a great start. And then everything else can kind of come naturally after that.
When it comes to wholesale pricing, is there a kind of magic number in terms of the kind of the discount you should be offering? And does it vary between the big retailers and the small retailers? Because I imagine this is something that people get really stuck on, trying to work out how to price their products for wholesale.
Yeah, I think so, because there's a lot of different, there's so much advice floating around out there. And a lot of the advice is US advice, and you know, their tax system work differently to us. So it's not necessarily the same. So we often say that a retailer would expect their wholesale price to be 50% of the ex-VAT recommended retail price, which is a bit of a handful. The recommended retail price is what they sell it for in their shop. So, you know, what's the same that you would sell it for on your website, for example, or Etsy or not on the high street. And your retailers would most likely be VAT registered, which is why we say 50% off the ex-VAT price. You probably heard that, you know, sometimes people talk about markup instead, and 50% off the ex-VAT price is a markup of 2.4. So you can get that price two different ways. Either you can take, say it was a product that retailed at £10, you can divide that by 1.2 to get the ex-VAT price and then divide it in two. Or you can take the £10 and divide it by 2.4. Okay. And that is what the retailer would expect often. It seems a bit high when you first hear it and when you first start to calculate things. But you have to remember that they have a lot of costs, of course, rents and staffing and fixtures and systems and rates and lots of things to take into account. So often that's what they need to do. It does vary a little bit from category to category. You know, magazines, for example, come with a lower margin requirement. Whereas something like mass-produced custom jewelry or clothing that are perhaps factory-produced often comes with a slightly higher margin. Larger retailers also demand more often, but that could be volume-based. So if you start at the sort of markup of 2.4, then you are at least showing people that you are competitive often.
Okay, so that was going to be a question. So that you could expect it to vary though between bigger and smaller retailers. What about online retailers? So retailers that just have an online presence, would you expect there to be a difference there?
No, I'm very much for having one pricing strategy.
Yeah, makes sense.
So having one price for everyone, because online retailers, even though they don't have the rent of the shop front, they might have big staffing costs, they might have rates, they might also advertise a lot, which of course often helps you as well as a brand. So I like one pricing strategy, and then on a case-by-case basis, if say, I don't know, Waterstones wanted your stationery and they said, we want to buy X amount, then maybe you can negotiate. But I think as a starting point, it's nice to have one set rule, because then it's equal for everyone. I think we talk a lot about being ethical and sustainable, and I think that is part of being ethical, is being fair to all your stockists and giving them the same chance to compete with each other.
Absolutely. And that does make sense. That makes sense as well for you to have one, yeah, to have one price, and that you've worked it out, and that you're happy and comfortable with, I guess, as well. Because I suppose if you work out this out and you realise that actually it's not going to be profitable for you, perhaps due to production costs or your time, if you're making the products, then at least that's something you can think about.
Yeah. And equally, you know, if you don't have, you're not quite there yet, say you don't, you know, you can get there with your margins, because you know, if you could get a little bit more volume, you can buy a little bit bigger, more confidently, because I don't actually advise to buy hundreds just to get your price down if you don't know you can sell them. So, you know, then maybe you go after the slightly smaller retailers, whether they are brick and mortar. Because even with independent retailers, there's obviously ones that are even small, you know, smaller than others. So maybe the ones that might not be VAT registered, for example, or online ones that are still very much a kitchen table operation, maybe you go with them first, because they might have more flexibility. You know, maybe you can offer them a little bit less of a margin.
Yeah.
So there's always ways to enter the market, I think. It's just you have to adjust your goals and expectations accordingly.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So how would you go about sort of finding retailers that might be appropriate for your product in the first instance?
It's funny, like it's my Instagram post I was writing before we
called. Really?
There's lots of ways. I think that the ease, you know, I'm very much for in the beginning, don't make it too hard for yourself. We can make it too difficult. At the beginning, ask your audience. If you already have an audience, say on Instagram, for example, ask them, like, where do you shop? Where would you expect to see my stuff? Tag your favorite independent retailers. And after that, I think it's good to go after, you know, your local community first. So we all have independents around us. I say all, depends on where you live. But I think most of us will know at least a few independents, whether they are online or in brick and mortar form, that we can maybe see our products in. So contact them. And then I think it's good to look at your competitors too. And when I say competitors, I say that kind of loosely, because I don't want you to look at someone that does exactly the same thing as you, but more someone that complements you. So if you do home fragrance, maybe someone that is in this, you can still go after their retailers, but offer something different. So maybe look at someone that doesn't use essential oils, and then you can offer the retailers an alternative. So they would want to have both, perhaps. Or something else that would work with it, like nice candle trays or incense stick holders, you know, like something that would complement and sit within the same kind of shelving space. Look at where they are stocked. A lot of people put their stockists on their website, and that should give you a steer to people that maybe are after similar things to yours.
That makes total sense. Thank you. Because I guess that especially for smaller stores, they may only want one type of candle or one type of moisturizer or whatever it is, because they have got limited shelf space and they probably don't want lots of competing products. That makes total sense.
I mean, with home fragrance being so big, I think that most stores would want to have a couple or three even, and they would probably go with a kind of good, better and best sort of price, where they will want to have, if you know, they want to offer it to different customers of theirs. But unless they have a big space, they might not want so much more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking they probably don't want lots of products that are going to compete against each other necessarily, do they?
No.
So like for like products.
Yeah. Like they wouldn't, if they already have an essential oil candle at £25, they wouldn't maybe want a different one that are the same in the similar kind of vessel. But maybe your vessel is ceramics and they're in an amber jar, maybe then it would be possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I have my products in a few stores and they're all local stores to me. And I literally just took my products in and said, can I speak to who's in charge, and showed them. And that's the way that I've sort of got my products stocked.
That's great.
Oh, thank you.
How did it feel?
Really good. Really. I mean, it's a bit scary to sort of say this is mine and do you want to sell it? But good to do, and almost in a way easier to do in person, because you get the instant feedback. You can see by someone's face whether they're interested, and so that's been great. But I mean, given that now shops aren't open, or majority of shops aren't open, and I guess also people might want to be thinking about bigger retailers, what other methods would you suggest for sort of making that initial contact with stores?
I mean, most happens by email, to be honest. It's a luxury to be able to find stores locally to you, because then you have the local angle too, which is nice. But most of the time it happens by email. So, and that is the same with smaller retailers and large retailers. So I would definitely have a nicely crafted email template that you can then personalize for everyone that you email, because it shouldn't be all copy and paste. But the essential information can be copy and paste.
Perfect. And what kind of things would you need to have in that email? As in, would you be giving out pricing in that initial email? What would you be saying in that initial email? What are the sort of key things to include?
So I definitely think to make it personal is number one. So no, dear sir, madam, or whom it may concern. It's often not that hard to find out the name of people. If you do a little bit of research, they might have it in their about section on their website or on their social media or on Facebook or somewhere. You can often find their name. So make it personal and then make it relevant. Ask questions. It's really about them and not so much about you in a way. And then I think it's really important to make it clear that you're selling something and what you do. You don't have to give your whole life story or your whole brand story, but the highlights that particular retailer might care about. So if you know they stock a lot of sustainable brands, then of course, maybe if you do the same, if you make sustainable products, you lead with that. If you know that they are stocking a lot of made in the UK products and you make your stuff in the UK, then you lead with that. So you make it personal and relevant that way. And then I think it's really important to tell people what kind of pricing you have. So not necessarily that you have to put all your wholesale prices in the body of the email, but at least give your kind of your recommended retail range. So say you do greeting cards and they retail between $3 and $3.75. I think put that in the body of the email somewhere, because retailers will have a really specific pricing architecture in their store. So they would want to know quickly if you can fit in. I would embed images, because most of us are visual, especially creative people. And then I like to link to my catalog or line sheet or whatever you have in terms of sales material, so that it doesn't go into the spam and they can still open that email and see all your relevant information, including how to order. Because basically you want them, that email, to include everything they would want to know to make a decision, even if that first email is not going to always be the decision-making email. You want them to have the opportunity should they wish to.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you.
No worries. I talk about it a lot.
This is good, because you're answering all the questions that I think people are going to have initially. And of course, afterwards, we'll give them links to where they can come and follow you if they want to go into this in a bit more depth. So you mentioned earlier that that wholesale is an option for handmade businesses and creative businesses. But it'd be good to know, are there any differences? So if you're hand making your products, is there anything different you need to be aware of or take into account if you're looking to wholesale?
Be very clear, like communicate your lead times really clearly and make sure that if you are getting overwhelmed with orders, that you give them, you know, you don't try to put so much pressure on yourself and them and give them 2-week lead time and you think that is cutting it really fine, because they will do their planning accordingly to what you say. It's okay for it to take 4 weeks. If it takes 4 weeks or if it takes longer than that, that's what they will plan to. It's hard if they think they're going to get in, you know, next week and you deliver a month later. That makes a big difference. So I think communicate what they can expect from you really clearly. That doesn't mean that you have to give your worst case scenario either. But I know a lot of people says, well, if I have to reorder, it's going to take 3 months. But chances that they will order so much volume that you have to reorder is probably slim. So you know, you can give a slightly better one. And then you can say a disclaimer that for any large order, this may be longer, sort of thing. So clear communication, I think, is number one. I mean, it's good for trust too.
Yes, absolutely. I think a lot of what I'm getting from you is that if you can be clear and upfront and fair with the entire process, that will really help.
Yeah, and you will become their like favorite supplier in no time.
Thank you. So you've given us lots of information on how to get started and things to think about. Is there anything to be aware of? Are there any sort of common mistakes you see or any pitfalls we need to look out for?
I think the thing that has come up lately is probably that you need to take care of your existing stockists just as much as you go after new business. It's much easier to get your existing stockists to buy into new products, to order maybe one time extra a year, which can change your turnover and grow it, and then keep getting new customers. So even if you have a new and shiny and exciting stockist, don't forget about the ones that have supported you in the past. They're going to be much easier to grow and much more loyal to you if you keep in touch with them. So I think it's really easy to forget.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's excellent advice. And yeah, so I think a lot of it is about relationships, isn't it? And just being kind and fair and talking to people.
It is. And, you know, that's how it's going to be fun too for everyone.
Because I guess, you know, the aim of wholesale as well as growing your business is also to build relationships as well.
Absolutely. That's how you get the most of your retailers too, by getting them involved. If you get to know them, they might say to you, oh, you should do this in a pink version because actually at the moment I'm doing this from this other brand and that's selling really well, or whatever pattern it might be, or, you know, they can give you a lot of insight.
Yeah, thank you. So let's talk a little bit about your services, what you do and how you can help people wanting to start retail. So I mentioned your podcast earlier, which I've been listening to. So should we start there and then move on to some of the other things you offer?
Yeah, so the podcast is on a little break at the moment, but I've done 4 seasons so far. It's called Let's Talk Shop, and I speak with industry experts or shopkeepers, buyers, brand owners, basically all about wholesale. Sometimes I cover different topics around business, but in general, anything that can help you grow your business. And it's very conversational like this. And I love it. It's the whole idea came about because I wanted to bridge that gap between buyers and sellers, because it's almost like we're in 2 teams sometimes, but actually we should be in 1 team. You know, we shouldn't be scared to contact people, even though it is kind of scary, I agree. But, you know, when you do something new, it's always a little bit scary. But, you know, most shop owners and buyers are in that position because they love products and they like finding new things, and that is their whole job. So we shouldn't be in 2 teams. So that's kind of the podcast, why I started it, and then it's kind of evolved from there to be a bit more all business stuff.
Well, it's a great listen, and I will link to it in the show notes, so wherever you're listening to this episode, you'll be able to find it easily. And what are some of the other ways that you can help people if they're wanting to start with wholesale?
So I have a few courses that I run regularly. I have one called Start to Wholesale, which probably when this goes out will be live, as in we will be midway through it. That's exactly what it says on the tin. It's literally taking you through the steps to get started, like your pricing and your sales material and your products. And then I have a course called Let's Talk Sales, which is kind of like follow up. You obviously don't have to do either or the other, but it's sort of all about selling. So about how you organize yourself, how you're finding the time to make time for your sales, and how you can shift your mindset if it's something that perhaps you're not very comfortable with, or if you are have lost a bit of mojo and you need a bit of accountability and a more strategic way of doing it. That covers that. And then I work one-to-one with clients too. So I work mainly on 3 and 6 months mentoring. But I do also offer one-off calls, and they are available on my website. And every month I kind of look at my calendar and see how many I can fit in. It's probably usually around 4 or 6. So yeah, that's the different ways, I think.
Perfect. Thank you. And I'll link through to your website on show notes again, and so that everyone can go and take a look if they are interested in working with you. So thank you for all you've shared today. I have one final question, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Which is, what would your number one piece of advice be for someone wanting to start a wholesale?
So I did write this down.
That's okay.
I would say not everything has to be perfect. I think one of my favorite quotes is, done is better than perfect.
I think mine too.
Carol Sandburg. I refer to it all the time. At least like I quote it at least twice a week. But it is very much something to remember when it comes to your wholesale, I think. Yes, you have to have a good product. Yes, you need to have some sort of sales material. Of course, you need to make sure that you know you make money. But I see clients getting stuck with creating the perfect, most beautiful catalog, or getting stuck with like making list after list of what kind of retailers they dream of being stocked in before they feel that they can contact people. Or they think they have to have numbers of years experience or X numbers of sales to be able to wholesale. And I think trying to go for that perfection is can hold us back a lot of times.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you. And yeah, that's another quote that I'm really keen on. And I guess as well that, building on what you've said, that once you get out there and you approach retailers, I guess you'll also get feedback that will help you to improve what you do, whether that's your catalogue, whether it's your pricing, whether, you know, whatever it is. So I guess there's a lot to be said for just putting yourself out there.
Yeah, even packaging, you know, you might get into a few smaller retailers and they might be able to give you advice on how you would display better or how it would be packaged in a way that works for them better.
I'm assuming, and I'm sorry because this isn't, I did say that was the last question, but I've just thought of another one. I'm assuming that if you go to a retailer and they say no thank you, or perhaps they don't even respond, and then on the back of that you maybe make some changes, whether it's to your packaging, whether it's to your pricing, can you then go back to them and say, you know, I've made this change, are you interested now?
Yeah, of course. I think that happens quite a lot in general. You know, people perhaps not putting their wholesale prices with margins that work for retailers, for example. And then they listen to one of the workshops I've done, or maybe work one-to-one with me or something. And we adjust their pricing and they go back and they actually get stocked somewhere, because they now have an offering that they can buy into and have confidence behind.
Well, that's useful. Thank you. So it's good to know that no might actually just be not now. It might not be.
And also it doesn't actually have to have anything to do with your products either or price. It could just be that they had 2 weekends that has been really slow, so they don't have the budget. But when you contact them a month later, they had an amazing 2 weekends and they have lots of budget and they need to spend it. So it can be lots of different reasons. And don't feel like it means that they don't like your products.
That's really good advice as well. I really like that, the fact that it's not personal. So thank you for sharing that too, because you're right. Of course, it might have absolutely nothing to do with you, the reason that they're not choosing to stock your products at the moment.
And often it's like that thing we talked about before, you know, that they had something really similar and they want to be loyal to that supplier. And you might not know that, especially now when we can't visit their shops and you can't know what they have coming in anyway.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think, you know, there might be someone that actually needs to hear that. So thank you. I think that's a really nice thing for people to hear, because I think, especially if you've created your own product, it can be a bit personal if someone doesn't like it, or because you're quite invested in it. So I can see that, you know, people could feel quite hurt by that. And I'm sure I have in the past. I haven't sort of done anything along these lines for a long time, but back when I was trying to get stocked in retailers, you can take a no as like a bit of a blow. So I think that's something really nice for people to just hold on to, that it might be nothing to do with you or your product. It could be something completely external to you that you may never even know about.
You might never, yeah, the chances are that they're not gonna say, you know.
Of course.
So just assume, if they're not gonna get back to you, then assume that they loved your stuff but it wasn't right for right now, instead of assuming the worst.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's an excellent note to end on. So thank you so much for everything that you've shared today, and for your time, and for sharing all of your knowledge, and yeah, for bringing a bit of positivity to this. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's been great. Thank you so much for having me. It was really kind of you. It's always nice to come and have a chat and also hear like how, you know, what things are important to you and how you see it, especially since you do supply shops. It's always nice to have a chat.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much for listening. As always, I would absolutely love to know what you thought of this episode. Please do remember to rate and review the show, and also, most importantly, subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And as a reminder, I release a new episode every single Friday. So take care and look forward to speaking to you again then. Hi, this is just a little note to say, if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.